99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Today is the anniversary of the most amazing landing in commercial aviation history. And on to explain how amazing it was is Dick Nepinski, the airplane guy, director of communications for the Experimental Aircraft Association. Hey.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
So it's the Miracle on the Hudson.
It is. You know, it's amazing to think that that's 12 years ago today. I remember that afternoon very vividly when somebody popped into my office and said, there's an airplane that just landed on the Hudson. And the first thing you think of is, oh, my, you know, it's a loss of life. It's everything else. And they said, no, everybody survived. They're out taking him off the wings right now. It's on TV. And you go, what? You know,
what?
Being a pilot myself, you think, you know, how did that happen? And so forth. And then the story became even more incredible when you heard all the details. And then when you had a chance to talk to the two pilots, Sully Sullenberger and Jeff Skiles afterwards. And it was like, that is amazing piece of flying and just how to keep your cool when, boy, it's just falling apart all the way around you.
Take us through that just so we can get a feel for how amazing it was.
Okay. Well, they took off from LaGuardia, and this all only lasted about 3 minutes and change. They were moving up to altitude, only a little bit over 2,000 feet above the ground, when they hit a flock of geese, and four geese went into the jet engines, two engines of the airplane, and completely knocked out the power, all the thrust. And takeoff and landing are the most perilous part of any airplane flight because you have the engines going either at full power or reduced power, and you're coming up to altitude or getting ready for landing. And so when you lose that thrust when you're in there, suddenly you have to look for a place to land. And I think we talked about that last time we got together. As a pilot, you're looking around saying, where can I put this down? And so very quickly they decided, we can't get back to LaGuardia. We can't get to Teterboro in New Jersey.
So they lost
There's only
both.
One spot.
They lost both.
They lost both engines. Yes, and no one had ever done that in simulators or anything in pilot training because everybody went, oh, that'll never happen.
That's why you have two.
Well, right. It happened.
One goes out, you have the other.
Did it smell like turkey dinner for a second, I wonder?
Yeah. Well, that's just it. You're trained to land on one engine and say, okay, we're fine. But to have both of them go out right at that point and right over New York City saying, how are we going to bring this down safely? And then to, you know, to make those kind of decisions work together in the cockpit.
So let's go through this. So now you have the loudest experience of your plane flight, the takeoff.
Right.
Engines full power. Here we go. We're going up.
Right. We're thrusting.
And then complete silence to where you can hear the creaking of the body of the plane.
Someone eating their peanuts.
Yep. It's like being on a ghost ship. Right?
It really is. All you hear is the air going over the wings at that point, and you're trying to decide, okay, you spend that split second, okay, what just happened? What do we do now? And this is where the airlines and airline pilots are tremendously well-trained. Sully and Skiles had never flown together before. They were just scheduled to take this flight to Charlotte, and okay, fine. And
does that happen a lot where you pair? Does that happen a lot? You just don't even know who's going to be sitting in seat two. You just get on and say, hey, how you doing? My name's Jim.
Yeah, I'm Bob. I've been good. Right.
Exactly. It does happen quite a bit because pilots filter through, and especially on the national routes, such as they were flying for US Air, happens quite a bit. So they met each other, but they both had the same training, so they knew exactly what checklist to run through. And their personalities were just meshed very well and were able to set the airplane down in the river with without any loss of life.
You can spill a drink. Easy, but there's a lot that happened before then. So the engines go out, and they have to figure out what happened.
Right.
So how many seconds did that take? Do we know?
It took less than a minute to figure out.
We're done.
We have no thrust.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Everything's busted. So they call into the tower and say, we got a problem.
Big problem. Huge.
Yep.
And they recommended a landing somewhere, right?
First of all, they recommended, can you get back to LaGuardia? And they said, nope, no can do. And they said, well, where do you want to go? Well, how is Teterboro? And they called Teterboro Tower and say, we have an emergency, have an airplane in. And then 5 seconds later, Sully decided that, no, we can't make Teterboro. We're losing too much altitude. We have to figure out where to go right now. And he told, you know, no can do, can't do that. Well, where do you want to go? And he said, we're going to set it down on the river.
Okay, so now when the engines are out, like if I lose if my car stalls or whatever,
right.
I can't really brake, I can't really turn. Do they lose all of that ability?
Yeah,
is it really hard to do everything?
No, they still have the ability to actually maneuver the airplane. It becomes a very large glider, not a really good glider, because some have gliding capabilities built into the airplane where you can turn it and set up for a landing someplace.
Now, is the fuel such that you want to dump it to lighten the load or not at all?
You really don't have time at that point. I mean, you're not looking at that. You can dump the fuel if you must. A lot of times that has been done, but in this, you're thinking about the first rule is always fly the airplane, fly the airplane, fly the airplane. And, you know, they were thinking, how do we get this set up for landing? And now, you know, we'd spent probably 3 minutes talking here. This is the entire length of time that it took.
Yeah, incredible.
It was done by the time we finished our conversation right now.
There was some gas released, though, by one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have.
So he realizes quickly, not going to make it there. Is he over the water at that time, or does he have to get himself over the water?
You're just starting to get over the Hudson River at that point, and so you're setting it up, and you have the George Washington Bridge,
right?
And you have to deal with that, so you fly over the top of the GW Bridge, and you start getting into this expanse of water in front of you, which, you know, fortunately, it was not ice-covered at the time. You could set it down on the water. But water landings in an airplane like this, an emergency, are incredibly tricky because you have to keep the airplane perfectly level, keep the nose up, keep the wings level, because if you catch a wingtip or you catch the nose in the water, things are going to go very bad very quickly.
It's going to somersault, yeah.
It's exactly. Incredible.
Yep.
We're talking about the miracle on the Hudson.
Huge miracle.
On this day in 2009. 150 people aboard, and Captain Sullenberg landed this plane successfully on the water. Yeah, so when it hits the water, it can rip apart. So once they realize they can't make it, they decide, this is it, we're going down in the water.
We're going to land on the water, and you know they realize, okay, let's keep it level, and that's when you announce, and you have to give the flight attendants credit, too. They were in the back keeping people calm, and when Sully said those famous words, "This is your captain, brace for impact," the flight attendants knew it's serious. This is going to be something that we haven't experienced before. So tell people, get ready. All those pre-flight instructions you get in the airlines that most people don't pay any attention to.
I don't.
They have those?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
This is the time where you better pay attention because, you know, get down, get ready, and then you touch down on the water. And, of course, you know, there's the tremendous whoosh when the airplane hits the water and glides along and eventually comes to a stop.
Well, think about being a passenger, right? You're taking off very loud, gets quiet, and it's quiet. And you know,
this
is not supposed to happen.
This has not happened before.
And then the captain comes over and says, brace for impact.
And you can hear it clearly.
And now you're looking out the window and you see,
hey,
we're going down.
I see buildings getting closer.
This is, you're like, how were people screaming?
I would have been.
What was
there was some of that. And that's where the flight attendants try to keep people calm. You know, at that point, you're probably thinking and praying because things are happening so fast. All you're seeing is, you're right, the New York City skyline, you're becoming part of it as you start to sink toward the Hudson at that point. And so, you know, when that occurs, what's going to happen next? There's that big whoosh. And Jeff Skiles had a great story. When they finally stopped, they touched down on the water and you had the big whoosh and the water comes over the windshield in front and the plane rocks and everything else and finally comes to a standstill. It's like when you're even in a fender bender or you fall off your bicycle, there's that moment where it's kind of silent and you kind of mentally check yourself out like, okay, am I here? Am I okay? Am I everything else? And Skiles turned to Sully and went, well, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah. Do you make that announcement at the end going, this is your captain speaking. Yeah. Thank you for flying with us. You made that announcement.
Yeah, don't get out.
Jeff told us that.
Just stay in
Jeff
for a second.
Jeff told us that. Yeah, Jeff told us that. And he said, boy, I wish they would have left that in the movie. But, you know, it was one of those things. And then they suddenly realize this airplane could sink.
Yeah.
And so how do we get people out in a hurry, get them out in the wings? And then they said just the incredible fortune to have the watercraft, the boats and everything right on the shore that had seen this and were ready to operate and leaped into action.
Seconds.
And quickly, seconds, drove out to that aircraft while people are gathering on the wing. And there were a couple people hurt. One person had two broken legs from the impact and things like that. But nobody was in a life-threatening situation. And that is really incredible at that point, because now you've landed the airplane, you've solved one emergency, everybody's breathing, everybody's fine, but now you're standing on the wings in the water, and you don't have forever to stand on these wings.
No,
which,
and it's cold.
Happened to be a little bit slippery. Yeah, it's cold.
It's January.
It's a little slippery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got water in the wings. This is metal. It's not a favorable situation. So the boats came out very quickly and rescued all the souls, and it was just an amazing piece of teamwork. And they call it the miracle on the Hudson for a reason, because you had the right people, right time, right resources when it occurred for those 150 plus people to be able to talk about it to this day.
The image I'll always remember is all the folks out on the wings. They look like penguins.
They did. They did. Like an
eagle.
They did. Yeah.
Yep. Right.
You know, you think about what they had just been through in 3 minutes, and now they're out. You know, because 3 minutes earlier, you're in a plane, you're taking off, you're going wherever.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, you're standing out on a wing in the middle of the Hudson.
Yep. At that point, I'm going home.
What the hell just happened?
I don't care where I was going. I'm going home now.
A lot can happen in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm
it's
going
amazing
home.
How
I'm
much
going
could
home
happen
now.
In 3 minutes.
I'm going to order pizza. I'm going to leave my house.
Exactly. You know, you're doing all of that, and you're expecting a normal flight from New York to Charlotte. A lot of these passengers were insurance people who've been working in the city for the week, and they're going home on this Thursday to spend the weekend with their families. And you're right. You kind of settle in and go, okay, here goes the flight. I've done this a zillion times before. And then this happens. And all the people involved will tell you they have a bond with those other 150 people that will last a lifetime, because they have that shared experience of what happened there. And, the airmanship of Sully Sullenberger and Jeff Skiles in that airplane that day.
It's like a policies.
It's like a military crew.
Yeah. Right?
You go through something like that together, you're always going to be connected.
That's it.
The movie. I'm sure you're airplane guy. So you watched the movie. Mm-hmm. How close to reality was that? And do you think they did a good job? Was there that big investigation after?
Yeah, the investigation was there, and they certainly did it. Probably the thing, you have to have some tension in a movie. And so they made the National Transportation Safety Board look much more evil than they actually were.
Yeah.
You hate them.
You do.
You hate them the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Skiles said, when I talked to him about this, he said it was very harrowing, because your career is on the line and they're asking a lot of questions about an episode that you went through your training, but now you're trying to remember, what exactly did I do a minute and 42 seconds into this flight?
Yeah,
and I'm going, boy, I don't know. I remember this, going through the checklist, doing this. But, it's like when you have something happen very quickly. Okay, what happened then? And you're going, I did this, I think.
Yeah, you don't want to start with...
The hardest part about that is you're being asked questions by people who would have killed everybody.
Right.
Like, they would never have been able to pull that off, and now they're hassling you about it. Like, how about this? You go home, you thank me, go home.
Right. The first thing you want to say is, I put my drink down.
Go write your report and go home.
I put my martini down.
Yeah.
Right.
And the end of the movie, they have to end with the dramatic music up.
Of course.
They made it seem like a trial, and they did the simulator. And
Right.
And like, all right.
I liked the movie, though.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved the movie.
We loved the flight.
Yeah. And actually, the line at the end of the movie, Jeff Skiles, when he was asked, Mr. Skiles, would you do anything different? He actually said this to the NTSB. He said, I would have done it in July.
Nice.
Because
much better, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Water's warmer. Nicer trees.
Yeah. Yep. And it's funny because Jeff was working with us at EAA. He's a Wisconsin native. He is and he worked with us for a couple of years before he went back to flying with American Airlines. And he was telling us about this sometime with the movie premiere and so forth. He said, it was wild. You go to New York, you do all of this stuff. He said, you know, what did you think about Aaron Eckhart, Jeff? He said, I loved it. He had a full head of hair. It's great.
He did a wonderful job. Well, they did say go see the Hudson. So.
Yeah.
Have they changed anything since then? What do they do about that bird problem now? Anything different?
Well, the birds, you know, it's still a problem. They, you know, you can do some engineering on things. The odds of that happening are so small. And the fact is, you have to have air flowing through a jet engine to make it operate, that there's only so much you can do. You can't put up, you know, a piece of steel in front of it and say, you know, non-goose zone.
Plow everything like out that. Of the way.
Yeah.
How about a screen for the engine?
You would think like a mesh, like a
screen,
fence or something.
Exactly,
you know?
So they can't get sucked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen videos of humans being sucked in, getting too close.
Yep, and
gone.
Hamburger meat. Hamburger meat. That's what they say.
They didn't have time to say
it.
There's no time.
Tremendous amount of force. It really is. It's a tremendous amount of force with those jet engines when they're fully engaged and putting out full power. You're lifting something that weighs thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds into the air to fly at 400 miles an hour. You have to think the thrust and the power that's needed to do something like that. In aviation, we have an old line that says, you know, you can make a barn fly if you put a big enough engine on it. And so it's one of those things that these engines are very large, very powerful, have a lot of systems in it, but never in simulation had they ever trained to have both of them knocked out at one of the most critical times during a flight.
So your answer is no, they haven't really done a lot to fix that. They're just hoping it doesn't happen again.
That goose pate.
Yeah,
yes.
they've done some things. And
I'm sure they're training for it now. Water landings.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they are. They put that into the training. And, you know, professional pilots out there will say, you know, every 6 months you're thrown back into the simulator and they throw a whole bunch of scenarios at you. And you sweat it out for a couple of days while you're working and doing the recurrent training.
Well, Dick, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. We're linked up to your stuff if people want to check it out. EAA.org on the radio station website.
Always
Dick
a pleasure,
Napinski,
guys. You know,
airplane guy.
A great time. Yep. Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. All right. On this day in 2009, Miracle on the Hudson, where that plane lost its power and had to land in the water. 150 people survived because of the actions of the crew. And in 2012, we talked to Captain Sullenberg, and here it is. Captain Sully, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning!
I know you've probably talked about this to where you're tired of talking about it, but let me ask you, at any point during that experience, did you think you were going to die?
No, I didn't. Even though in the first seconds I knew exactly what had happened and why and what that meant for us, and that this was going to be the absolute ultimate challenge of a lifetime for us.
Did you see the birds coming?
Way to solve the problem.
Did you see the birds coming?
About 1.5 or 2 seconds before we hit them, but not enough time to maneuver away from them. And then they were upon us, and I felt and heard them hit us. It was shocking.
And what does that sound like when you lose an engine?
Well, hitting the birds sounded like running into hail from a thunderstorm. And then the engine spooled down the spinning back, and then the loss of thrust was just a startling loss of momentum, bottom falling out of our world, nearly stopping in midair is what it felt like. Of course, we didn't stop, but that lack of acceleration was really startling. And then we had to start flying the airplane by hand and turning left and looking for places to land. We had 208 seconds ultimately from when we hit the burst.
Wow.
Not much time here.
Not a lot of time to think about things.
You have to realize the suddenness, the enormity of this problem. There wasn't time to think about anything except flying the airplane and deciding where to go with it in the time that we had left. I didn't think about my family. I didn't think about anything except solving the next problem one at a time. There wasn't time even to have a conversation with my first officer, Jeff Skiles, about what we were going to do. I had to rely upon him hearing my conversation with the air traffic controller and inferring my intent from that.
So I'm guessing you had complete confidence in your co-pilot.
Oh, absolutely. And had he not been so experienced, had he also not been a captain before the last round of cutbacks, had he also not had 20,000 hours, we couldn't have had the same outcome because I didn't have time to tell him what to do.
It sounds like if you didn't have him next to you, it would have been completely different.
Harder. I mean, it took two of us to make this all happen, and in the cockpit, plus all those in the cabin crew, plus the New York waterway to rescue us. Everybody had to do their jobs that day.
Yeah. What was job one as soon as you lost power?
job one was flying the airplane and making a left turn and up three options I knew I had, choosing the one that would work. There were only two runways near us, but the runways we couldn't make. And so the only place left in the entire area that was large enough even to attempt landing an airliner was the river.
We're talking to Captain Sully Sullenberger, Miracle on the Hudson. So how long from the time you lost power to the time you realized we're not going to make an airport, we're going to have to go into the water?
You know, I think early on I knew we would probably end up in the river, that we couldn't make it to a runway, but I had to try. I had to consider it. But it probably, you know, just over a minute, I was pretty much convinced we were going to be in the river. And I was glad to have it.
How far off of the water were you at that point?
Well, we never got higher than about 3,000 feet.
That still sounds like a lot of feet to me.
That's pretty high.
No,
yeah.
It's not, especially when you're descending at the rate of, if you were in a high-rise elevator, 2 floors per second.
What did you have to do at that point to make that plane land safely on that water?
Well, we had to judge the height very carefully at which to begin raising the nose for landing, because we're coming down much more rapidly than a normal landing. And if I pull the nose up to start landing too soon, we would get too slow and hit hard. If I waited too late, we would hit nose down and to hit too hard. So it was critical that I judged the proper height at which to begin raising the nose.
How were you able to judge the height? Because that sounds like it was so critical in a safe landing. Nose couldn't be too high, tail couldn't be too low. Did you have instruments, or were you doing this by gut?
Well, we had instruments, but in order to judge the height, I had to do it visually. I had to look out the window and decide, my experience that, and what rate of descent I'm seeing, that the time to do that would be now.
How many people were on the plane?
All total passengers and crew was 155.
155.
Good man.
Unbelievable.
Good job.
Nice work to you, your crew, Captain Sully. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. What a dude.
He's got a great voice, huh?
That's what you took away from this.
No.
Not that he was able to look out the window and decide whether or not the nose was too high or the tail was too low to have a good landing on the water with over 150 people on board. Seconds to do it. It was like, wow, he has a nice voice.
He does.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.